Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode will cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 83. Why is Blizzard bleeding users? Leroy Jenkins!
Oh boy, it is the first of two earnings episodes. I think we're only doing two because this week is a blitz. But the benefit of us bumping from Sunday to Monday to give you that break that you so desperately needed and deserved is that we were able to loop Capcom into this show also.
We did. So how we're going to handle this is Mike is going to be leading us through both Capcom and Activision, and I will be leading us through Zynga and Nintendo.
Yep. So to kick it off, Activision.
Before we preface this, or before we go in, can we just continue to preface this with, I just hate covering Activision.
It's really rough because they've been saying the quiet part loudly lately with regard to their hires and everything.
And executive compensation.
Yeah. Although, nice. And we'll talk about that a little bit.
Okay, let's get to it. Lead me through.
All right. So remember, Activision's fiscal year is a mirror of the calendar year. Yep. So they begin their fiscal year on January 1st. They end their fiscal year on December 31st. So these are earnings for first quarter ending March 31st, 2021. So net revenue exceeded outlook for the first quarter, hitting $2.27 billion, up $260 million over the outlook.
Whoa.
And up $487 million, or 27% over first quarter of last year.
Dare I guess what their big revenue driver is?
So $132 million of the growth came from full product sales. $355 million came from, as I'm sure you already guessed, in-game purchases, subscriptions, and other revenue.
Other revenue.
Net income, so that's profit, increased $114 million, or 22.6% for the quarter, to $619 million total.
Ooh,
for
boy,
the quarter.
For the quarter. Man, those are big numbers.
EPS jumped 14 cents to 79 cents, which is also 20 cents over outlook.
Okay, so because this is our first earnings show of the quarter, and folks might just be coming in to listening to an earnings show for the very first time. Mike,
sure.
What is EPS?
It's earnings per share. So it's your total earnings divided by the number of shares outstanding gets you to EPS.
Michael is mathing again.
Yep. It's time for math. It's time for math. It's time for math.
I did not sign up
it's
for
time
math.
For math.
I signed up for analysis, not math.
So remember, Activision has a number of different pillars, so we're going to break them down. The three biggies, of course, being Activision Publishing, which is where you'll find Call of Duty and, I guess, Crash 4 and some mobile stuff.
But
I
mostly
guess.
Call of Duty.
But mostly Call of Duty. So Activision Publishing revenue grew 72% year over year, with operating income doubling year over year.
Wow.
Call of Duty monthly active users have tripled over the past 2 years thanks
Whoa.
To mobile and free to play. So that is Call of Duty Mobile
and
Warzone.
Yeah.
Exactly. Activision Publishing now has 150 million monthly active users. That's a new record, up from 102 million first quarter last year.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because
so
that ended. So last year, so year over year looking at this, it is in direct comparison to the beginning of the pandemic.
Right. So, I mean, if we look at it, January, February in the U.S. was relatively normal. The first half of March, for the most part, was normal-ish. And then the second half of March, of course, we start moving into full-on lockdown.
So it's going to be really interesting to see what that year-over-year looks like in the next quarter.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of tripling, Activision has plans to increase the number of Call of Duty devs by 3x by the end of next year. So look, if we've talked about Activision Blizzard putting their eggs in the one basket. Now, granted, Call of Duty has a lot of flavors.
It's a very...
Vanilla, French vanilla, vanilla bean.
It's a pretty basket.
It is.
It's a pretty basket that's made of barbed wire.
Yes.
And guns.
So really, let's break down what that means. That means Call of Duty Mobile.
Yeah.
Which is Timmy Studios, right?
Yes, it is.
So that's not even internal to them.
No.
That's owned by Tencent.
It is.
We're talking about the three Call of Duty studios. So that mm-hmm. is the three pillar Studios, rather. That's Sledgehammer.
Yes.
That's Infinity Ward.
Indeed.
And that's Treyarch.
Yes.
Not to mention Raven, which is doing support Toys for Bob, which we know is now supporting... Activision Publishing should just rename itself to Call of Duty Publishing.
Honestly, that would be more honest.
Right.
That honestly,
I mean, it's not that there aren't
honest.
Other games coming out, but they are few and far between, and...
This is not the Activision Publishing that we have known over the last decade.
Right, exactly. There have been... When I was working at Game Informer, I used to talk to Eric Hirschberg, who is now doing, like, super leftist music. I can't imagine, like, that he would be happy at Activision today.
Super leftist music?
Like, super leftist dad rock?
I didn't know that was the vibe I needed on this Monday afternoon, but it is, in fact, what I need.
Eric, I always liked talking to Eric. He was always fun to talk to. But back then, Activision had, like, a number of different pillars.
It
had Family, it had Skylanders,
yeah.
And Guitar Hero.
Yeah.
It had Destiny when they still were in a relationship with Bungie. Mm-hmm. And it, of course, had Call of Duty. So you were touching a lot of different... a lot of different audiences mm-hmm. in a completely respectful way.
In a respectful and consensual way.
Now it's Call of Duty. I mean, yes, they did Tony Hawk.
Yep.
But that was at Vicarious, right?
Oh, yeah.
And now,
oh,
they're,
I'm sorry.
And now they're folded into Blizzard.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They don't exist anymore as their own studio-ish.
Ish. I mean, again, they're working on cool stuff. They're doing Diablo 2.
We'll get there.
And then, of course, you've got Toys for Bob now, which is supporting Call of Duty, which to me is the tragedy. I know we've talked about this before because I visited that studio. I watched their version of Imagineering and how they create Skylanders characters. Aww. And it was just the most wholesome, fun trip, like, to a studio that I've taken.
And you understand that wholesome is my brand. Personally,
yes. You would have loved
that. I bet I would have loved
so
that.
So the fact that they're increasing their Call of Duty developers by 3x by the end of next year really speaks volumes to where their priorities are.
Yeah.
And part of that is because they've really broken that firewall between Activision Publishing and Blizzard. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So
okay.
Call of Duty monthly active users were up 40% year over year. And the tripling, by the way, was over the past 2 years, which is why you've got two different stats.
Okay.
So 40% year over year, tripled over the past 2 years, thanks to mobile and free to play. Net bookings on console and PC were up 60% year over year. So this is, again, just a reminder on the definition of net bookings. In-game net bookings primarily includes the net amount of downloadable content and microtransactions sold during the period and is equal to in-game net revenues, excluding the impact from deferrals. Now, remember... Deferrals very quickly. There's deferred revenue, so it's paid
yeah.
to you, but you haven't actually delivered out the content yet,
therefore,
so you have to hold it.
You can't realize it.
Right, exactly. Call of Duty Mobile now has 500 million downloads. So that
500 million.
Yep, that is a train that is just not stopping. So when we look at, what was it, Apex, which is going to have its own mobile and it's going to be portioned off. It's not going to be cross-play, so it's not going the Fortnite route. It's going the Call of Duty
mobile route
or the PUBG mobile route.
You know what? That is great because I'm not going to lie to you. I am terrible at Apex any way that you slice it, but I'm way better with a mouse and keyboard. And I would imagine that being paired up against someone playing on mobile, even I might have a chance.
So Call of Duty Mobile is, of course, its own thing, just like Apex is going to be its own thing. PUBG Mobile is its own thing.
Yes.
So they're not going to be, they're going to be on their own cadences, their own cycles.
Okay.
And you're not going to be in cross-play situations.
Got it.
All right. So that is everything on the Activision Publishing side. Really the
Mike,
big takeaways
what's going
here.
On with Blizzard, though?
Before we move on to Blizzard, just the big takeaways from Activision Blizzard. Call of Duty is it. There is other stuff going on. A little bit here. So Tony Hawk Pro Skater, remember, it's just coming out on Switch very soon. And Crash 4. But for the most part, like, there isn't much to Activision Publishing that isn't Call of Duty these days.
Yeah.
All right. Blizzard. Revenue only grew 7% year over year. Now, again, when you talk about the fact that this is a comparison to mostly pre-pandemic to pandemic, that's not a lot.
No. That is a minuscule amount, especially when looking at their competitors that have been growing exceptionally well year
right.
over year.
So let's talk about the nuts and bolts of that. So World of Warcraft drove the growth since Blizzard hasn't released anything new. In fact, someone mentioned to me this is the longest that Blizzard has ever gone between the release of a new expansion and its first major patch. So even the fact that they released Shadowlands in last fiscal year,
That was in November.
It was Shadowlands is what it was called?
I believe so, yeah.
There has not been enough pushing people to stick around and come back if they've already completed that content.
Yeah, and I mean, unless you're really grinding through endgame content, which quite frankly, not everybody wants to do.
No.
Endgame content is not fun for some people. It's very stressful.
Yep. So all of this is reflected also in the monthly active users.
Okay.
So Blizzard MAUs are now below pre-pandemic usership.
Oh my goodness.
So okay, where we've seen...
Walk me through what that trend looked like.
Okay. So just to remember, as what we've been looking at industry-wide over the past year, is that usership is growing. We've got new acquisition because, hey, gaming is one of the only things that people were able to do.
Yeah.
We had lapsed users coming back. We had new users getting into the ecosystem. And I'm talking about the industry-wide ecosystem, not necessarily just publisher-based.
Mm-hmm.
So they were 32 million in Q1 of 2019 and 2020. And they are already declining now. Right. From then,
mm-hmm.
it was 38 million in Q1 of 2018. So we've got 38 million in Q1 wow. 2018, 32 million in Q1 of 2019 and 2020.
Right.
They're at 27 million now.
27 million.
Yeah. So from 2018 to now, they've lost 11 million monthly active users.
And that's across all of their properties, correct?
It is. It's pillar wide. It's business unit wide.
Business unit wide.
So that includes everything. So that's attrition from Diablo. That's attrition from WoW. That's attrition from StarCraft, from Heroes of the Storm.
Hearthstone.
From Hearthstone. Everything. Now, again,
and
I don't
Overwatch.
Have... And Overwatch. We don't... And again, Overwatch 2, how far in the distance is it? There hasn't been a new hero. So what we're seeing is contraction on the Blizzard side. Now, they did reconfirm that Diablo Immortal is coming this year in mobile. It's in phase 2 testing. So that's a thing that's happening. And Diablo 2 is reconfirmed for later this year as well. So that is going to cause a resurgence, but we know we're not seeing Diablo 4 in this fiscal year.
And probably not next either.
I would be surprised if it didn't come out late 2022. Because Rod's there now.
The closer is there, as opposed to the cooler.
Yes. Yes. We're not talking about the cooler today.
We're not talking
about
the cooler.
We'll talk about the closer because Rod has a very good reputation, an earned reputation, for coming in and fixing projects that need to be fixed and getting them out the door in good shape.
And that's the thing that I really want to focus on is that when we think about the quote unquote magic that happens at some of these major studios, you know, Blizzard is one of them, BioWare is another. If you do not ship your product, the magic doesn't matter.
Yep. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So Rod Ferguson being there actually leads me to believe that we will see it next fiscal year.
I'm still very pessimistic about that. It has to, first of all, it needs to coincide with BlizzCon. It has to, because that's just the way this tends to go, is that if they are going
Diablo
to...
Diablo 3 launched in February or March.
But they had a demo at BlizzCon.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
So if they, and I'm not saying that they're going to necessarily do a live BlizzCon this year because they already did BlizzConline, you know, but they are going to have things ready to go when they do start talking about Diablo 4 in a more concrete capacity. Because
sure.
All we have right now is a cinematic trailer.
Yep. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Now, they have been talking a little bit. There have been, like, dev blogs and stuff on a monthly
sure.
basis. But it's not
but the, dev
the
blogs...
meaty stuff that people usually sink their teeth into.
Absolutely.
All right. So that's everything on the Blizzard side. I'm very concerned about those MAUs. We'll see how they rebound when
honestly,
the Diablo
I'm just
games...
concerned about Blizzard. I really am. I mean, this is a company that has been... This is a team, rather,
mm-hmm.
that has created some of my favorite games of all time.
Yep.
And I'm watching their steady decline, and it just makes me sad.
Yeah, I mean, the only new thing they had wasn't new. It was the Classics package that they released that had, like, Rock and Roll Racing and Lost Vikings.
That's true. Also, Rock and Roll Racing is legit.
It is, absolutely. All right, so the last Activision Blizzard pillar is King. Revenue is up 22% year over year. Candy
mm-hmm.
Crush, of course, being the major driver there. MAUs were down year over year from 279 million to 258 million. But
that's not surprising, though.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There are fewer players, but those players are being monetized more through pay and through ads.
Right. And so that's going to come down to the technology that King is implementing in their online bidding systems when it
mm-hmm.
comes to how to advertise. to specific players with IAP and with ads. So it's really interesting. Like it's something I wrote about over on GameSpeed is like the differences between the different various hybrid models of monetization on mobile. It's fascinating, mm-hmm. but that's the reason why we're seeing big returns, even though MAUs have been on a steady decline. And they're on a steady decline because people are not traveling. And yeah. when do we play games on our phones? When we're on trains. About,
yeah. So advertising net bookings are still up huge. And this was something we noted at the very beginning mm-hmm. of the pandemic and in the first couple of quarters. They're up 70% year over year. And that includes both direct brand advertising and the partner networks that they work with.
That's really fascinating to me.
So the other thing I just, you know, you mentioned it at the top, but just a reminder that Bobby Kotick's salary and his bonus structure was cut. So we'll see. We'll see. Again, record revenue for the quarter, right?
Yeah. Somehow that's definitely all Kotick. Right? He definitely did.
No, it wasn't. I'm sorry, it exceeded outlook. I don't know if it was record. I just want to clarify that. But yeah, so that's, it's interesting. I mean, obviously we always have our eye on Activision because they are like the 900-pound gorilla in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Blizzard stuff that jumps out at me. The Blizzard decline in MAUs, now it's not to say it won't recover if, you know, when that next patch comes out for World of Warcraft, when Diablo 2 hits, I'm sure we'll be playing the heck out of it.
Oh, we absolutely will. Diablo 2 is my very favorite of all the Diablos.
Yes. So that's a good thing. So that's everything on Activision Blizzard. Obviously, numbers being, like, revenue being up and everything, not a big surprise. Call of Duty, kind of, we knew that it was stomping through the world and picking up huge numbers of users. The Blizzard stuff being the big thing that kind of jumps out at me, like, this doesn't look so great.
Yeah. For sure. And it'll be, like I said, it'll be really interesting to see what the year-over-year comparison will be next quarter.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's talk about Capcom.
I love talking about Capcom.
I do, too. This actually won't be a very long conversation because this falls in line...
Is it all about Monster Hunter?
Not just. This falls in line with a lot of the stuff we've been talking about with Capcom over the last few quarters, so none of this is going to come as a shock. They closed out their fiscal year, 2020. Mm-hmm. They had a record year for the fourth consecutive year.
Hey,
which proves out, in my opinion, their strategy of iterating on high-profile, beloved franchises and taking strong entries in those franchises that are older now and remaking or remastering them.
Absolutely. People are clearly hungry for that. Because, and again, this all comes down to ensuring accessibility to newer players as well. Players that didn't grow up playing video games in the 90s because they literally weren't alive in the 90s.
Oh, I'm so old.
Yeah, but I mean, our kid is 17,
yeah.
right? And this is, for her age group, this is a great pull for them to start to be able to sink their teeth into older RE titles. Or older titles in general.
Well, especially since it's so hard to get the original versions.
Exactly. And the original versions... They don't live up to modern standards of gaming.
No, they don't. And we're not just talking controls, but, you know, PS1 era sprites kind of are timeless, but the original 3D graphics on PlayStation 1 and Nintendo 64
are in fact not.
They don't hold up.
Unless it's Banjo-Kazooie.
Now, what's interesting is obviously Resident Evil 3 wasn't as critically acclaimed. I don't think it sold quite as well as Resident Evil 2. Resident Evil 2 was always the more beloved entry in the series.
Yeah, exactly.
I am curious. There was of course rumors of a Resident Evil 4 remake.
Well, after the success of Village or the purported success of Village,
mm-hmm.
it'll be interesting to see whether or not we get that Resident Evil 4 remake.
Honestly, I love that idea for them for doing both because they can continue the series in its new first-person format and they can also bring back the classic games, like the classic stories, but really they have been overhauling those games entirely, rebuilding them from the ground up such that they don't feel like the old games.
They don't.
They just retell the stories.
Yeah, exactly. And again, bringing in newer audiences.
Now, the reason I'm interested about that is that RE4 is one of the most beloved games in the series.
Absolutely. And it is honestly one of the games in the series that I 100% missed.
Also, it's coming out in VR on Quest 2.
Later. Absolutely not.
No, no, not for me.
Extremely
I,
no.
I will, no, sir. I do not like it. So I think that there's a lot of, and I hope that that's not what they were taught, that like that's not where the rumor was coming from. I hope there's a full-on RE4 remake.
I hope so,
not
too.
Not that that game doesn't hold up, because it still holds up. All right, so let's talk a little bit about that now that we've kind of set the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's jump into the numbers. Yep. Walk me through this.
Net sales for the fiscal year were 95.3 billion yen. That's 876.8 million dollars US. That's up 16.8%. Now, operating income was 34.6 billion yen. That's 318.3 million US. Up 51.6%. And now here's the biggie.
Oh boy.
Net income was 24.9 billion yen. 229.3 million US, up 56.3%.
Woo!
Now that's full year over full year.
That is full year over full year. Amazing.
Yep. So you mentioned Monster Hunter.
Yes.
Monster Hunter Rise came out on March 26th, right?
Yes.
So at that point, they're able to realize all of their deferred revenue from the pre-sales, right?
Absolutely.
So that was a huge contributor. We knew that it sold 4 million in the fiscal year, and then it sold 5 million and 6 million. So it was 4 million in this fiscal year. So it's another 2 million that's already contributing in the new fiscal year.
Sure.
RE3 Remake did also have a major role in the performance. Catalog titles like Monster Hunter World, Iceborne, and RE2 Remake continued to put up big numbers for them.
I love this for them. Monster Hunter World is such an accessible title. Like, it's even more accessible in some ways than Rise is. And I love Rise. Mm-hmm. I really do. But when you want to play with buds, you want to play World.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Rise, I think, is hampered a little bit by the Switch's online and the way Nintendo handles online.
Yeah.
Not that's just a factor of the platform.
It is.
But I think you're right. If you're going to play with people, it is much easier to team up in World, regardless of the platform you're on.
Absolutely.
So Capcom, of course, looking ahead to this year, expecting it to be even bigger up and down the P&L statement.
That's
100 million in sales is what they're 100 billion, sorry, yen in sales is what they're expecting for the current fiscal year.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's huge. So of course, Resident Evil Village is going to be a huge contributor. You know, it's funny. I don't think they stumbled into that, because I think the game stands on its own, and I've played a little bit and you watch me play a little bit on stream.
From everything that we're seeing, this is a new beloved entry, and not in the way that Resident Evil 7 was. Resident Evil 7 was kind of mixed among critics, and especially among Resident Evil fans. It was the first entry that was in first person, you know, but people are really, really loving Village for the story, for the set pieces, for the gameplay, for the sound design.
And it supposedly stumbles a little bit in the second half.
Yeah.
But here's the two pieces of the marketing that I think were really strong. One they stumbled into, and it was,
Tall Vampire Lady.
I'm not going to pronounce her name.
No, as it turns out, that is the correct...
Lady Demetrice?
Yep, because it's Romanian. And James was telling me that, and James has Romanian coworkers, that's how they pronounce it.
Okay, fantastic. So Lady Demetrice, I think the internet's love affair with her, and that's probably the nicest thing I can say about it on this PG-rated podcast.
Are you saying that I shouldn't dress up as her and play Resident Evil Village on stream?
I think you should absolutely do that. I think you will break the internet because you're gorgeous.
Oh, and, you're so sweet.
At the same time, like, the internet went a little overboard, but Capcom used it to their advantage. Like, they made standees of her, like 9 feet tall standees. And
they've done a lot of cross promotions as well with other brands, you know, including food brands. I think that there was they did a pizza partnership or something like that. I don't remember which brand it was. It might have been Domino's. With Lady Demetrice be like holding pizza.
That's essentially so funny.
But like, it's that cross branding promotion that makes it so sticky. And honestly, that's part of what made Cyberpunk 2077 such a sticky thing too, is because of all of the cross brand promotion, but they didn't earn it and Capcom did.
Yes. The other piece of this that really jumped out at me was, and it kind of crystallized last week when I saw some comments, I think Eurogamer covered this, some comments from the team where it's like, okay, so we got some feedback that Resident Evil 7 was too scary. So we want people to be able to play our game. Like, we look at that as a huge success, that it was that scary. And we want our game to have greater reach. I played the beginning. Now, I know that there is a moment, I think it's, the castle's the first place you go, and then there's something that happens after the castle that gets, like, super creep town. So they ease you into it.
I hear that there are dolls.
Nope.
I saw.
Nope.
I saw one of our Twitter.
I want
one
that
of our
Barney. I'm gonna do that Barney mod.
Oh God, no.
So that is one of the things. The other thing they did, the puppet thing, like We're Not So Scary. Like they had the puppets.
Oh my gosh.
So like they really did a very smart marketing thing to be like, hey, if you were scared crapless by RE7, like you can come play RE8. We have not just a recap video, but we have like an 80-page document that can take you through everything that happened. So they're really trying to get people in who were a little scared. And I think it works. Like, you get a shotgun pretty early in the game. Now, it's not to say it's not tense, but it is not scary in the same way that the Baker Estate is.
Yeah, the Baker Estate is very scary.
Okay. So, addition to RE Village, which is all hitting in this fiscal year, Monster Hunter Stories 2 is coming out. And I believe Monster Hunter Rise is coming out for PC as well. And
this year?
I believe it's going to be in this fiscal year.
Oh.
So that's going to be really interesting. So let's just look at how things broke down a little bit for them. Mm-hmm. The video game division was up 25.6%. That's their digital contents division. To 75.3 billion yen. It's a massive portion of their revenue, 79%.
It's incredible.
Arcade operations were down 18.4%, but that only represents about 10% of their total revenue.
This one's interesting, though.
Amusement equipment, and we talked about this a couple times, about like the rules and regulations around pachinko and patchy slot machines changing. So that was up 8.5%.
And I would imagine that that's because like amusement parks and casinos and stuff like that are starting to repurchase.
Yes. Yes. And because they're looking towards reopening as well now that vaccinations are underway. That only represents 7.4% of the business. And then their other business, which is film adaptations, like the Monster Hunter movie, which is atrocious.
It's so bad. Mike and I are such Monster Hunter fans, and it's garbage.
Yep. Merch and other things. That was up about 1%, represents only about 3% of the business. I want to talk real quickly about RE Engine, so the Reach for the Moon engine.
Yes.
That
everyone thinks stands for Resident Evil Engine.
I want to talk about it a little bit because that engine, I think gamers are fawning on that engine a little bit too much because they're forgetting that it's a tool. It's a very good tool, but
it's a robust engine. And there's nothing that can take away from that. It really is a robust engine.
And as great as it is, now again, we've seen it in three different styles of games. We've seen it in first person with RE7 and RE8. We've seen it in third person action, very close over the shoulder survival horror with Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 Remake. And then we've seen it in fast moving, big open spaces with seamless loading in Monster Hunter Rise. And that's where, to me, it really shines.
I still can't get over how quickly that game loads and moves on Switch.
Yes.
It's bonkers.
And to me, that really speaks to the technical prowess of those who worked on the engine, because it optimizes across platforms really well. But the one thing I do want to caution about, and I think is important for us to say before we take our break, is that the engine is the foundation, and RE Engine is a very strong foundation. But I would hope that when we talk about these games, we talk about what was done with those tools, not just how great the foundational tools are.
Both of them together.
And that is propelling Capcom in a way that the fact that they have now a publisher-based engine is fantastic, because we've seen where it's fallen down with EA, where Frostbite is not a one-size-fits-all solution.
BioWare, in fact, can attest to that.
Absolutely. We've seen Ubisoft kind of go through its own engine stuff, and it seems right now that they are kind of paring back, and that it's Anvil and Snowdrop at Ubisoft are the two biggies that are being gravitated to. Snowdrop, of course, for games like Division, and Anvil for things like Assassin's Creed and Watch Dogs because of the procedural generation tools and how it fits the design ethos of those games.
Certainly.
So with that, let's take a break. We'll come back with Zynga and with Nintendo.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
So, we are back, and we are back to talk about Zynga. So Mike took us through the top half, I'm going to lead us through the bottom.
Sweet.
We are going to be talking about some big numbers at Zynga for Q1 fiscal 2021. Remember a couple of days ago, talked about Zynga's acquisition of Chartboost. That was a $250 million acquisition.
Yeah.
That gave it a brand new revenue stream.
Which is important because... Yeah.
So we'll get there. There are some things to keep in mind with this. Remember that Zynga is very bullish on mergers and acquisitions. That's how they have been since Frank took over. And I have a feeling that in order to continue to keep both the franchises fresh and the technology fresh, as well as the revenue streams, we're going to continue to see Zynga, you know, just barreling through those M&As and picking up these great companies to merge into the corporation. So they had a record quarterly revenue of $680 million, beating guidance of $635 million, and they were up 68% year over year.
That's huge.
Big numbers. So 68% of that revenue, unsurprisingly, comes from their forever franchises, including CSR Racing, Merge Dragons, Words with Friends, and Zynga Poker. 15% comes from social slots and casual cards. So that's the Game of Thrones slots casino, Black Diamonds casino, Hit It Rich slots, stuff like that. 17% comes from quote-unquote other. Bookings were up 69%.
Nice.
Very nice. Year over year. To $720 million. Zynga pulled in the money.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where things kind of take a bit of a left turn. Zynga also reported a net loss of $23 million, but they did beat guidance of a loss of $50 million.
Right. So they closed the gap more than they expected.
They did. Mm-hmm. They closed it quite a bit by almost half. I guess by more than half. Which is really incredible. So the company has been reporting net losses for a number of years now. This is not new. Again, what I want to come back to is that because Zynga is so dedicated to smart mergers and acquisitions that are going to continue to propel them through the years, remember, they're still rebuilding. They are working on a very, very, very long-term rebuild that happened as soon as Frank took control of the company. Mm-hmm. So, mobile... daily active users are up to 38 million users, which is an increase of 17 million users, 85% year over year, and 2 million from last quarter.
So they're up sequentially, and they're up year over year by a ton.
By a ton.
Okay.
So mobile monthly active users are up to 164 million. So that's an increase of 96 million, 139% year over year, and 30 million quarter over quarter.
Wow.
These are really big numbers. So the increase in the MAUs and DAUs are in large part due to the acquisition of Rollic. And that happened back in October of 2020. And we reported on that.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's really interesting to me. So the average bookings per mobile DAU are sliding a little bit to 20.2 cents. And that's per...
user.
Per user. Yeah. And that's down 1.4 cents year over year and... 0.3 cents sequentially. So to break that down and why that's significant, you know, it's...
more users paying less as opposed to King, which was fewer users being monetized more. Yeah.
So I have a feeling that the reason why that is because while King has fewer games as well. Mm-hmm. Zynga has more games that you can choose from. And if you are like me, like I really enjoy playing Merge Dragons and I play Words with Friends and... you know, like, but if I'm in all of these different applications, I'm not necessarily spending in all of them.
Right.
Right? So that is...
yeah, so just to be really clear about that, if you play multiple games, you're double counted.
Yes, you are double counted.
Yeah.
So that's both weird and helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so something to note is that hyper-casual really is growing, and it's becoming more and more important for Zynga with the launches of games like... High Heels and Blob Runner 3D, which are number one and two respectively in the US App Store for free games.
That's wild.
That's incredible. And I mean, listen, hyper casual has been really starting to make its mark, not just in mobile either. I mean, we're seeing it in indie games, even over on Itch.
Mm-hmm.
It's important and it helps keep gaming accessible for a lot of different people. Now, remember the last time that we talked about Zynga in earnest? We talked about cross-platform and how cross-platform was going to be something that Zynga was going to be focusing on. So Star Wars Hunters, which is going to be, that's their game that we saw during.
It was the teaser that was in one of the, it was in the Nintendo Direct.
It was in the Nintendo Direct. And it had a Zynga logo on it.
Yeah.
I've never seen a Nintendo Switch game with a Zynga logo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really cool. So that's due out for this year. Zynga also acquired Ectra Games, which is Torchlight 3.
Yeah.
During this quarter. So, I mean, again, this all comes down to, okay, why are they posting losses? Oh, look at the amount of things that they invested in.
You know, just real quickly on this, from an analysis and trend perspective, to me, it seems like when Zynga started, there was not an appetite, an interest, or even tolerance for recurrent revenue in consoles and PC.
They were ahead of their time.
Right. And now that there's a reason for them to get into those platforms.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So Zynga, as a result of all of this, is raising guidance by $100 million for both revenue and bookings versus its prior guidance. The company still projects a net loss of $135 million compared to an actual net loss of $429 million.
Last year.
For last year. Yeah, that's right. So, cool. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, I know that losses are losses at the end of the day, but we see it from so many different public companies. We've seen it from Roblox. We see it from Unity. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are investing heavily in if you are investing your dollars back into your company, that's going to cost you money.
Yep.
Got to spend money to make money.
At some point, you do need to start breaking even and turning a profit, though.
It does look like they are heading in that direction, which is far more positive than they were doing before Frank took over. Before Frank took over, they were headed for bankruptcy.
Absolutely.
You know who's definitely not heading for bankruptcy?
Who?
Nintendo. I love talking about Nintendo.
I love Nintendo.
I love this show. Let's talk about Q4 and fiscal year 2020 earnings for Nintendo. So they had a full year revenue of 1.76 trillion yen, which is $16.1 billion US.
That's a lot of bells for Tom Nook, baby.
So many bells for Tom Nook. That's up 34% year over year. Now buckle up. Here's where the good stuff happens. Their fiscal year operating profit was 640 billion yen, which is $5.87 billion US, up 81.8% year over year.
Jesus.
Net profit for the fiscal, 480 billion yen, $4.4 billion US, up 85.7% year over year.
Tom Nook is so happy.
Tom Nook has turned into Scrooge McDuck.
Swimming in his vault of bells.
You know what? I can respect that. So the top performers, unsurprisingly, have been Animal Crossing New Horizons, which sold 20.85 million units. I believe that is I believe that's for the fiscal, but 32.63 million life to date.
Yep.
Incredible.
Yes.
Absolutely incredible. That is only beat by Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which sold 10.62 million copies for the fiscal last year and has sold 35.39 million life to date.
And that's not a surprise. Mario Kart is always at the top of Nintendo's. I think, did it just reclaim that spot from Animal Crossing?
Mm-mm. It never.
So Animal Crossing got up to number two?
Animal Crossing is.
But still, the fact Animal Crossing got up to number two is huge.
That's enormous.
Yeah.
And remember that in prior releases for Animal Crossing, Animal Crossing has been considered niche.
Yeah.
So this is no longer niche.
No.
Ring Fit Adventure, this is the fun one. Ring Fit Adventure sold 7.38 million copies last fiscal year, bringing it up to 10.11 million life to date. They sold the vast majority of their copies last fiscal.
And I think they would have sold a lot more if they weren't supply limited.
Yeah, people really enjoy Ring Fit. It's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Super Mario 3D All-Stars brought in 9.07 million units sold, which is, you know, it's
near. Here and gone.
It's here and gone.
Came in this fiscal year, and now it's gone.
And now it's gone. It's going back into the Disney vault. Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury, 5.5 million units sold. I don't think that one's going into the vault. Is that one also in the vault?
No, it's not. Because it came out in March, I think.
Okay,
good. It came in late February.
All right, awesome.
But no, that one's sticking around.
That one is definitely sticking around. So sales, the most important thing to remember here is that sales were also strong for third-party titles. This wasn't just about first-party. The Switch had 36 million sellers.
36 million sellers.
Yes.
Yeah, so 36 games this fiscal year sold a million copies on the Switch. That's wild.
That's wild. Yep. I don't even know what to do with that. Hardware sales are up, unsurprisingly, 37.1% with 28.83 million Switch units sold in the fiscal year. Their life to date is now up to 84.6 million units. And at this rate, yeah, it's looking good.
Yeah,
it's looking
good. Given what we know about their projections for the coming year, it looks like they will surpass the Wii in fiscal year 2021-22. Mm-hmm. And they will start nipping on the heels of the 3DS, which is at 150-something million, and the PS2, which is at 150-something million.
They're getting there.
If they come out with a mid-generation refresh, so not a generational upgrade, but that's rumored Switch Pro.
That is a big rumor. It's not something that we're going to see this year.
No, not with
not,
not with
even
shortages.
An announcement. Not no. even an announcement.
So if they do that, though, I think that propels them. I think they reach that 150 million mark.
I think they would quite easily hit that because we are looking at multiple Switches per household,
yeah,
which is exactly what Nintendo
huge.
Wants. So let's talk a little bit about software sales. Software sales were up 36.8% with 230.88 million units sold in the fiscal year. Holy crap, that's a lot of software.
It is. It really is.
And Nintendo has finally caught up on its add-on content between the Pokemon Sword and Shield expansion passes and the Smash Ultimate Fighter Pass 2 and other DLC, Nintendo Switch Online, and full game sales. Digital was 344.1 billion yen, which is $3.15 billion US, or 20% of total revenue.
Inclusive of hardware.
Inclusive.
Their total revenue.
That's wild.
That is wild.
That's amazing. And that's also not surprising.
Yep.
And that number is up 68.5% year over year. My God, the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are incredible. Mobile and IP related income, which could be anything from like merch or licensing or whatever, mm-hmm. Was 57 billion yen, which was $522 million US. That is up 11.3% year over year. I can talk, I swear, sometimes. Continuing. Outlook for the new fiscal year, it's a little conservative, but accounts for the supply constraint.
Sure, absolutely.
And the post-pandemic adjustment is so important mm-hmm. because as vaccines continue to roll out, I don't know about you, but I'm going to be going out more.
Okay.
So.
I'm going out because I got my Fauci. Ouchie. Oh, yeah.
Very nice. So what are we looking at here? We're looking at revenue. So this is for Outlook. This is the Outlook for for this coming fiscal year. So the Outlook for revenue, they are looking at 1.6 trillion yen, which is down 16 billion yen. Again, mm-hmm. not surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Operating profit of 500 billion yen, down 160 billion yen. Net profit of 340 billion yen, down 140 billion yen. They expect 25.5 million Switch units to be sold, which as Mike said, that will surpass the Wii's 101 million in this fiscal year. Game Boy is at 118.69 million. The DS is 154 million. And the PlayStation 2 is 158 million. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
The Switch is crushing it and eating everybody's lunch.
Now remember, the Wii U sold 13 million.
13 million.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And this year alone, for this upcoming fiscal year alone, Nintendo is looking to surpass that.
Mm-hmm.
This year.
Yes.
Just this year.
Just this year.
That's okay. Let's talk about attach rates here, Mike, because I know that you were putting these notes together, so you clearly had something in mind. Why don't you walk me through what you
got here? Sure. I think what's really interesting to me, because someone said to me, it's like, oh, well, what does the attach rate look like? Is it better than the DS? Is it better than the... Than some of the other consoles. So the Wii's attach rate was actually 9 games. So for every Wii sold, there were 9 pieces of software sold.
Okay.
Which is interesting to me because there was a ton of shovelware on the Wii. But again, it was in non-traditional gaming households.
How dare you call WarioWare shovelware?
No, not WarioWare.
Okay.
The ones that came with like the plastic like tennis racket and stuff.
Listen, I played those games. I had fun.
I'm not
with
talking
them.
About Wii Sports though.
Okay, but I played those games.
So you saw people buying people buying more software for the Wii. People loved it because it was, the modality was different. It was easier for people to grasp. Yeah, the waggle controls for core gamers, like, were not precise enough, but for people who weren't, who look at a PlayStation controller or look at an Xbox controller and are intimidated by the number of buttons.
Well, not just the number of buttons, but the number of analogs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of analog sticks. Like, that's a lot.
Yep. So the DS, the attach rate was 6.
6 pieces of
and
software.
And the 3DS was 5.
Is 5.
The Switch is interesting to me because it's landing in the middle. It's at just under 7 right now. So for every Switch sold, there are 7 units of software sold.
Now, that's not to say that the Switch has a less robust library of software.
No, it's that I think what's driving that number down compared to the Wii is that because you have households that have multiple Switches in them, like ours, and you buy one physical copy, you can pass that around. Whereas with a home console, you're buying one console and then you're just buying a bunch of software.
Exactly.
I think if you... It would be interesting to me if they looked at, if we knew how many Switch households there were, and to do an attach rate per household.
I would be very interested in that because I know that I know many households that have at least 2.
Mm-hmm. But I also think if we hit the Switch Pro, that number is going to come down mm-hmm. because for the same reason that the DS and the 3DS numbers are lower is because when you have iterative consoles, you have repeat purchases. Even if someone only has one in their house, they might buy... the 3DS Lite, or they might buy, or the DS Lite, they might buy a 3DS, a new 3DS because they want the second analog stick or something.
Sure.
So you have repeat purchases when you have iterative hardware.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm obviously guilty of that myself.
Sure.
It's not iterative necessarily, but I have the Animal Crossing New Horizons mm-hmm. special edition Switch.
Yep. Absolutely.
So
that was just to put some clarity around what's going on. I think it's really interesting that right now the Switch is landing right in between the pure handheld and the pure living room console. So
it's almost like it's a hybrid or something.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what happened in the call.
Yeah, there were a few things, and I noted that David Gibson, who is in Japan, who is an analyst, who I really like his commentary. There were a couple things that he tweeted about, and of course, we've talked about 2 of these games before.
Yeah, so Animal Crossing New Horizons and Monster Hunter did create those surges in usership, which mm-hmm. is not surprising. It's one of the things that we noted even last year, that because we saw Animal Crossing selling gangbusters, even though it had only been out for like a month at that point, or even just weeks when we reported on this last year, mm-hmm. can you believe we have been doing this for a year?
Yes.
That's banana pants.
Yes.
So we knew that that was going to create more surges in hardware purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that. But this is cool too. First time Animal Crossing users have tended to buy other first party titles because that trust is created.
Yep. So we're talking about things like Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Luigi's Mansion.
Everybody,
Mario Party. So there are a lot of reasons, especially if you are a first time Animal Crossing, if you're buying your second Switch to play with your kids, and you wrote that amazing piece on the Washington Post.
Thank you.
About how people were playing with their mothers.
And they were playing with their children.
Or they're playing with their kids.
Yeah.
So which is like, oh, let's play, especially now that Mario Party is online, you can play that online.
Oh, we are going to have a chaos stream at some point.
Oh, boy.
And we're going to play Mario Party, and we're going to do it with Vio.
Oh, that's, I'm on board. That's
I'm
fantastic.
Excited for
them. But yeah, so this one, we talked about the Switch Pro, and we talked about the rumors around that. Now, this last note is very interesting to me.
It is. So there is increase in research and development. So they are investing in the next platform, and they have to reflect that game development costs are subsequently rising.
Yeah, because they were asked about rising costs, and those are 2 places. Now, it is not surprising, and we talked about this, I think we talked about this 2 days ago, and last week we talked about the rising costs. We talked about when R&D happens and all of that sort
that
of
thing. That was last week.
No, it was 2 days ago when we were talking about the Xbox thing with the Epic versus Apple suit.
Oh, that's right.
Time is a flat circle.
Time is a flat circle because we were talking about... the 30%.
Right. So
okay,
R&D
it.
Investing in the next platform, I would not take that to mean anything specific.
No.
It could be.
They're always
right.
working on that. Every platform holder is working on the next cycle.
Right. So also that could be money spent across an iterative hardware release and a new generational hardware release.
We don't know because we're not inside.
Yep.
But
quite frankly, if they do not mirror the Switch's modality, the Switch's play modalities in the next generation, I'm going to be really disappointed, because having a console that you can dock in your living room and then take with you.
It's so good.
It's just, it's the dream, baby.
It is. It is. It is the absolute dream. And all in all, Nintendo continues to have strong performances across the board. We are going to start seeing the long tail, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like we said last year that we are going to see the long tail as we come into that post-pandemic slump. The game industry saw an enormous boon. It's not necessarily going to see a bust by any stretch of the imagination, but growth is going to slow and we are going to start seeing things taper off at least a little.
Yeah, we saw even NPD's Matt Piscatella talk about how the attrition's probably not going to be as bad as we thought it was going to be, which is huge for the industry.
It's wonderful. It actually grows the pie.
Absolutely.
And we love a big pie. And we also love the pie. And we also love the end of this episode.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH.
And I'm at Amanda Farrow.
You can also subscribe. If this is your first time here, welcome. We love having you here. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. You can also listen to us on your favorite podcast delivery service. That includes Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast. There's one more. All right in the face.
Every time.
We would love it if you would subscribe. And if you can, on your platform of choice, review the show. Let us know what you think.
You can also DM us with your questions at Virtual Econcast. You can send them to podcast@fsquared.biz. You can ask them on our super warm and inclusive Discord community, which grows a little bit more every week.
Yep.
We love it. We actually take questions from our Discord community.
Absolutely. And you can hit us up via Twitter DM if you would like an invite. We're glad to share that with you.
Absolutely. So other stuff that you can do to support the show is you can support us on Ko-Fi.
Yes.
That's ko-fi.com/virtual economy. You can actually even buy stickers there.
That's pretty cool.
I'm pretty excited about the stickers.
I'm very excited about the stickers.
I bought them. I love these stickers very much.
All right. So here's what's going on this coming weekend. We will have our regular news show on Saturday. And I think, I don't know if it's going to be Sunday because we have a lot going on Sunday. It might be Monday again where we do earnings round two. This week is full of earnings. So it is, that one's going to be a chonky.
That one is likely, if this for four companies took us almost an hour, we are likely going to be pushed into the hour and a half, 2 hour mark.
We are also not going to deep dive in the way we did on these four companies.
No, we are not. We are going to take the big movers and shakers, and everybody else is going to be relegated to, like, financial quick hits.
Financial quick hits. And financial quick hits. All right, so that is it. We will be back on Saturday with the news show. Remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.